switch. And this podcast is going to be available probably in 2 weeks, and we'll be sending out something about that. I'm pleased to introduce you to Yuri Cataldo. Yuri, for purposes of this case, Yuri is the co-author of Discover Bitcoin and Cryptocurrency Before Your Grandmother Beats You to It. Obviously, Yuri has never met my grandmother, but so be it. What impresses me about Yuri is he's been admitted to three of the most selective institutions of education that I know of. He is currently at MIT Sloan, which has a 14% acceptance rate, not bad. Previous to that, he got his undergraduate degree at Yale University, which has an acceptance rate of about 7%, not bad. But what really impresses me about Yuri, he was admitted to the Juilliard School of Performing Arts in New York City. And that has an acceptance rate of 7.7%, just like Yale. That's a really, really tough school to get into. Yuri's first career was as a classically trained set designer and costume designer. And he has some credits on Broadway and film. Yuri, any films or shows we might be aware of?
So probably, maybe, but they're not very good. And so I worked on the movie When in Rome, which stars Kristen Bell. And it recently popped back up on Hulu, and I watched it for the first time in 10 years. It is not good. It is a Disney flick, and it's got some, it's Danny DeVito's in it, Angelica Houston, but it is terrible. But it was a lot of fun to work on. I also helped out on Salt with Angelina Jolie. And so those are the two big films I worked on in the background. You'll not see me anywhere on there, but I'm behind the scenes, and I made sure everybody had their proper clothing across the board. I mostly did all the extras. So like thousands and thousands of extras. I got very good at shopping in New York for thousands of people of different sizes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yuri
is an important talent.
Yes, especially at that time, it completely was. And then on the Broadway side, I worked on White Christmas and the reboot they did in 2008 of West Side Story. So if you saw any of those, I was also on the back end of all of those.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yuri is not just a set designer. He's also the founder of Indigo H2O, the only multiple award-winning bottled alkaline water in the world. Let me stop there. To me, there's only two kinds of water. There's tap water, there's Poland Springs. That's all I know. So Yuri, tell me what alkaline water is.
Sure. And I probably would go into a lot more detail when I actually was running the company versus now that I closed it a few years ago. But the concept of the alkaline mineral water is just that it has a higher level of calcium and magnesium, which oftentimes our bodies need anyway. The water, particularly why it was better and award-winning, I served it in cobalt blue glass bottles. So it was beautiful to look at. It was very well designed because of my design background. And the taste was very crisp and clean and clear. So you had the benefits of mineral water without the taste of mineral water. And that's really what the secret sauce was. And I'm very good at marketing. Across the board, exceptional at marketing bottled water. And that's really kind of what popped it to the top, especially having a weird background as a theater student who then starts a bottled water company. Piece of cake marketing right there.
Good for you. Good for yeah. you. Finally, also for purposes of this presentation, Yuri is the co-founder and general partner of Athenian Capital. He leads the fund investment strategy in blockchain and in Web3. So Yuri is going to react to your team's decisions, and we'll take it from there. First is the first team. I've got Brian, John, Laura, Mark, and Peter. Who is the spokesperson?
I'm going to be Larry. Thank you. Okay. Let's see, we said not now, maybe not never. We'd like to await guidance from the SEC, but this is too much in its infancy for us. We wondered first, the case is pretty quiet on this. You know, how big is the problem really? Where are we worried that we're losing talent? What are the demographics of that talent and in which countries? Because we don't really understand how big the problem is, even though it's asserted to be a problem. We'd also want to understand if our clients were okay with this kind of approach. But in general, we are not enthusiastic, and here's why. Fundamentally, we think employees don't know what they don't know. The volatility of the coins themselves affects both the salary. If you look at the NFL player Odell Beckham Jr., his contract was $750,000. He has to be paid in Bitcoin. It ended up being worth $400,000. Oh, but by the way, he's paying taxes on the $750, right? And the treasury management issues for the company itself could be profound. If you buy it one day, but pay it out the next, and it goes down by 30% or up by 30%, which isn't unheard of in crypto, then what happens from an accounting perspective? The treasury management you would need and the currency exposure and hedging sophistication you would need probably rivals a hedge fund. We also worried that employees may not be sort of accredited investors or that sophisticated. How sophisticated are they? What risk do we as an employer bear if they receive much less than they were sort of contractually thinking they were getting because of the volatility in the currency? We also were concerned about taxes because even though your amount paid could go down, you're still liable for the taxes. There are also significant cyber risks with issues like SIM card theft, which sadly I was a victim of. So would you have to tell employees they have to store their crypto in cold storage or similar? In California, you can't even pay people in crypto due to labor laws that demand you pay in the fiat currency. We aren't advocating for this, but if we were to think about trying this, we would recommend ring fencing it and doing a small trial to make sure it's legal in the local market, limit the type of crypto to something like Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, or Ethereum, which are more widely held and less volatile than some of the newer currencies. We'd want to limit to a salary percentage so that somebody isn't risking a huge percentage of their salary and probably have some kind of minimum salary bar. We'd also want, you know, legal documents that explained employees would be responsible for capital gains. Other risks we discussed were the SEC risk. Tesla is being investigated. That was announced today. MicroStrategy was touted for being one of the public companies that holds crypto. But someone on our call noted, I think it was John, that MicroStrategy was being dinged for holding too much crypto as an asset. So those were the items we discussed and why we were not enthusiastic about moving forward.
Okay, thank you very much. The next group is Craig, George Gorman, Karen, Kevin, and Robert.
Okay, I'm the spokesman for our group, and if you hear any cheering in the background, it may be my dog who wants to go out now that he's been fed after we finished our other discussion. But we were very similar to group number one. We said that as a board audit committee chair, we would need a lot more information about this before we could even consider it. We focused a lot on law and tax rules in the United States and each of the local countries that we would be paying people in and having a clear understanding of what the rules were. We also talked about, it's not a currency. I'm not sure if the SEC has said it's a security, but if it's a security and you're paying your people in securities, there's a whole additional bunch of rules and tax laws and treaties that would come into play. So we need a lot more information. We also talked a lot about having to consider the implications of being the company being an SEC registrant, disclosure, consider concerns to the company's clients also, whether they would be in favor of this, and the shareholders in terms of all the risks that are involved. Talked a lot about the managing, if we were to do it, have a clear understanding of managing the volatility risk, the marketing, valuation risk, whatever you want to call it, the hedging that was mentioned. We were like, come back with a lot more information, and then we'll start to ask more questions, I think, okay, is the bottom line. But it would be a long way.
Thank you very much. The next group is Bob, Mark, Marianne, and Susan.
Hi, guys. I think I'm elected to represent our fierce debate. So it was interesting. We all were joking going in that usually people are very on one end or the other on this whole world of crypto, and we definitely represented that. So I think where we all came to and what we agreed on is that it's not a debate about whether crypto is going to be a thing. It's already a thing. And then where we started debating is saying, as a company, what is the right time for us to get involved, and what is the right way to reduce risk and still be able to have a competitive advantage when we're talking about being able to find global talent, right? And so bottom line, the product of this company is talent, which is already one of the hardest challenges for all of us right now, is hiring and getting good people globally. And we do have a large contingency of people for very good reasons, especially in other countries, who are demanding that they get paid in crypto. And so if we look at those reasons, I think we all believed that we are going to have to figure this out. We just don't want to take on the risk to do it ourselves. And so there was disagreement of what that looked like, but there are intermediaries who are actually able to sort of play that role, who are doing it for MasterCard, Airbnb, Uber, and some of the other employees, where whether it's they're paying in stable coins so they can actually pay in something that's not seen as a security, and they don't have the back and forth on their books, or that they're using an intermediary who does the actual transfer, so they're still paying in U.S. dollars, and then depending on what that local currency is. So we all said, yes, let's really look at where the future is and how do we roadmap our way to get there, get the right experts, bring on the right understanding of who these players are, who can take on this massive challenge, so we don't kill the company's margin that's already slim in additional work and paperwork to manage, but let's put our feet in the water in the right places, because it is going to be the future. Did I miss anything, team?
Can you unmute yourself?
Yes. I was just going to add that everything that Susan said, I think, represented all of us. But I had added the point that I thought in this particular instance, the board should support the CEO, who seems really to feel like it's going to give her a competitive advantage in being able to attract talent. And so we should get the experts to help us make sure that we do it the right way, but that we support her because she seems very proactive.
Yeah. All right, last team is the two Aries, Jim and Yuri. Who's the spokesperson for that group?
I'll be the spokesperson. Jim had to jump off, but apologized, but was very engaged in our conversation, and our comments reflect his as well. So I think that, the things that I'll say that you've also debated and heard around sort of the concerns, but I think we took a step back as outside directors and said, okay, there's really a threshold question. Are we in, and then if in to what degree, or are we just saying hands off? And the consensus was that hands off is not the right approach. You know, you can't ignore this. I think, Susan, as you said, it's not a question of whether it's here or not. Like other teams, then the question becomes, okay, what's the pace? And what do we as external board members need to get comfortable? So we felt that we like the enthusiasm of the CEO, but we also felt, at least based on the details of the case study, that not enough work has been done. There's not enough data in the presentation to us, in the discussion, that helps us understand, you know, what is the risk, what is the opportunity, data around, you know, potential attrition and so on, competitive advantage. So a lot of the things we've talked about. So we had some, once we're on the threshold question that says, or we move beyond the threshold question that says, yes, we want to look at this and not let's, you know, we weren't the school, so let's just postpone it a year. We said we need to engage in the understanding aspect now. And key, you know, there needs to be a framework, and management needs to come back really with a plan, not just an opinion of wanting to do something. And the four frameworks that jump out are, you know, accounting. And we did discuss the example of, I think it was Micro Focus taking an impairment charge. Yuri gave us a little, you know, primer on some of the accounting issues. So accounting, taxes, legal and regulatory, and then of course the reputation risk and ESG balancing with the, because of the environmental impact of paying in Bitcoin. So again, we didn't come up with answers. We said at a minimum, these are things we want to see, we want the management to address. So insisting in a more strategic plan, data, also upside, you know, other regions in which right now our operations are limited, where this could actually create an opportunity. So there are regions where we just can't engage in foreign currency trading, or whatever reason, you know, we might not participate. Does this open other regions to us if we can get our heads around this? And then finally, you know, our goal, you know, this is a very interesting strategic objective, but of course also begs for, you know, good governance. And what we'd like to see also is, yes, assume management can persuade us at some point we need to get in to this. Now, how do we mitigate some of that risk? And there too, we had elements that we suggested we would want to see. We wouldn't necessarily tell management, but these are, as we think about giving guidance to management, these are some of the things we would hope to see. We talked a little bit about an intermediary entity, sort of a buffer, which would probably be a good way to even experiment with a few customers. I think we have to be very cognizant that those entities could very well be our competitors going forward, right? So we have to be careful with that type of engagement. And we discussed maybe even investing in an entity like that, that is a separate buffer entity, you know, keep it below 20% if we want to, you know, keep it off our balance sheet, keep it off the P&L, but at least have some engagement with the company that's providing these buffer services. You guys suggested engage with customers, talk directly to customers. If we don't have a customer advisory board, I think this is a great type of subject for the customer advisory board around to get their engagement. And one of the questions, you know, do we just give customers the option? Do they tell us whether they're okay with this or not? And that would be another way, again, of gauging how widely accepted this is in our customer base. And I think the final ask we had of the board is for a couple of board members to volunteer to sort of go off while management is working on their plan. Those board members would spend more time becoming, gaining a little more expertise, because I feel like today, for example, if somebody presented a plan to me, a detailed plan of cryptocurrency, I'd be comfortable saying, I don't know that I know enough or that I'm equipped enough with technical and financial aspects of cryptocurrency to be able to assess a plan. So whether it's a committee or whether it's just a couple of board members raising their hands saying, you know what, we're going to go and spend time on this so that when we meet with management, we'll be better educated. We felt that would be a good approach. So I think generally not too inconsistent with what we've heard from other teams, and just be focused on sort of, okay, as board members, what, you know, what it is we would expect from this process.
So thank you. So Yuri, so you've heard the different teams. Let me be, I think it's fair to say it's a spectrum of opinions, mm-hmm. ranging from let's not touch this to let's embrace it and everything in between. How consistent is that with what you're experiencing in the real world?
Sure. I first want to say thank you to everybody for coming tonight. I have learned a tremendous amount just listening to, like, in my group and this group, how y'all think as board members. I have more experience as a founder and on the startup CEO side of it. I'm on the board of a nonprofit, but it's a very much a working board. So just hearing the questions and the way that all of you think through how to press a CEO has been phenomenal. So I want to thank each of you for that. That alone is worth my price of admission just for listening to that. In the real world, what I've been looking at and noticing, actually, it is very similar in this case. And I think, so starting on the accounting side, My group didn't know that, and I gave them a little bit of unfair advantage because I do know the accounting rules for that. And so I'm curious if each group had a little more information, if they might make a decision one way or the other. So on the accounting side, and actually the fun thing with this is because I'm at MIT, I actually asked my accounting professors and they didn't even know. So I'm starting a new group of accounting professors who've gone deep down and researching this because it's not something that's that readily known. Right now, cryptocurrencies are accounted for as intangible assets on their balance sheets. And so this is also why MicroStrategy is having a huge problem right now. So at the time of their purchase, they have to write down exactly when they got in. And if you're MicroStrategy in 2021, that was between the $40,000 and $60,000. Every time it goes up, they can't log it as a gain because they're not selling it. But every time it goes down, they have to write off as the value as an impairment charge. And so that's why MicroStrategy is really upset right now because they're being hit by impairment charges and it is killing their books. Same thing with Tesla. So unless your company actively is trading, that's how you have to hold it. And that's why they're all lobbying the SEC right now. I doubt it's going to change anytime soon. But that's so that across the board is what's killing it. And that actually is why a lot of the other companies I did research on don't want to hold it on their books for that exact reason, because it is so volatile. It's great when it's going up, but it sucks when it's going down. So there's that part of it. On the other side of it, so once you get that, then there is the idea of, okay, is this a real item? Is this a real thing in the market right now? And there are a lot of companies who think it is, but those are more like the tech companies. And so you're looking at like the Facebooks of the world, Airbnb. And I know this because there's already some competitors. And so why we actually brought this up in the group, there's a competitor called Bitwage. They already do this for groups, and they will pay them in whatever currency they want in their local area. And there's a lot of tech companies doing that. Should this company do this? I mean, as many of you brought up, and I love that, it's like, show me the data. I don't actually, and I agree with all of you, I don't know there's especially in our case study, if there is enough data or not to show whether or not it's like a few people or if it's really a thing. Or as Ari brought up, did the CEO do all of their homework, or is it a pretty shiny thing? But on the pretty shiny thing right now, that is a big deal in a lot of companies as there's a mass exodus happening, particularly in a lot of these startup companies. Actually, particularly some of like right now, Facebook and Amazon and Google, because there's a huge move to companies working in the Web3 cryptocurrency blockchain space. And a lot of younger workers are okay with the volatility of what's happening. And they're okay with what's like the up and down. And so they're willing to take a risk in some of these instances. I do like that Laura brought up a very good case study about a time very recently where taking a risk really backfired for somebody. And so Odell Beckham Jr., who's a football player, and she hit all of the high notes. He got a $750,000 bonus in Bitcoin when he transferred over to the LA Rams. And he decided to take that all in Bitcoin. At the time, that Bitcoin was worth $60,000+. Now it's dropped down to $35,000, around there. So his originally $750,000 is now worth $400,000. And that's before you take into account all the taxes he has to pay. So he has to pay all the taxes at $750,000, and he's doubly taxed. He pays state income tax in California at 12% and a federal rate because he's above $625,000. His bonus is actually worth $35,000 after taxes. So, and that's someone who is wealthy. Imagine what it's like in each individual types of other potential employees who don't have like that windfall. For him, that's extra money. A lot of employees don't have that. So that's a huge thing to keep in mind. There's that benefit. Of course, when Bitcoin is going up, the employees will love it because everything goes up and it's this exciting thing to have. So that's a very important thing to balance back and forth on that. The other thing that was brought up and is still an incredibly difficult item is how do you actually get this to your employees? So Bitcoin cryptocurrencies are amazing because they're peer-to-peer, but they're also incredibly complicated, and something like this still hasn't been sorted out. Even if you use a Coinbase or something else, this actually is like the entire thesis of the book that I wrote was, how do you explain this for the average person? And to be honest, the average person doesn't really know how to work with cryptocurrency or really understand it or how to manage it. Because you are your own bank, that's both exciting and terrifying. Because if you lose access to your accounts, then you've now lost all of your money and there is no way to regain that without using a third party. And so that leaves this whole other area as a company you'll have to solve on top of that. And then the last part is like the regulatory aspects of it. So right now it's a regulatory, well, quagmire basically. So in the United States, it's still legal. It is by the SEC considered to be a,
they consider a replacement for a sovereign currency.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you. So you have that. Also then, as other people mentioned, depending on what country you're in, some of them have outright banned it and made it illegal. So there are 9 countries in the world who have made it illegal, not just to accept, but to hold it. Then there are other 40 countries who have banned it and they don't like it, which means that you can't go to a bank with it and you can't work with it in another kind of way. So that itself makes it a little more complicated and gives Bitcoin still this overview of, is it used for illicit activities? The truth is it's mostly not. We don't have time for that, but I can show you the data. But there is some percentage that is used for illicit activities, but primarily if you want to money launder, you should actually use traditional banks and cash, because it's actually easier and it's not traceable. So there's that whole area that still is part of the Bitcoin lore of, it was used to buy illicit activities and illegal goods. So does that then make your company also part of that? And then the last bit, the ESG part. So yes, Bitcoin requires tremendous amounts of electricity. I believe right now it's more than the country of Norway. It's like, I think it ranks 11th if it were a country. If you really look at that though, and you start breaking it down, while Bitcoin does in fact take a lot of energy, most of the companies now who are mining Bitcoin have gravitated toward cheaper forms of energy, primarily around green resources. And so you're seeing a lot of mining operations pop up in Texas. There's one that happens in Pennsylvania now. And they are retrofitting old mines. They're also using green energy for that too.
Yuri, can I interrupt you?
Of course.
I'm going to ask a question which is going to reveal to everybody how little I understand about cryptocurrency. When I think about cryptocurrency, I think about digital currency like zeros and ones. When I hear talk about mining, like actually taking things that are tangible, I don't understand that. I thought cryptocurrency was digital currency.
So it is digital currency. Mining is not a physical item, it is a digital item. So the short of that is Bitcoin operates on a process called proof of work, which means that in order to introduce new Bitcoins into the market, as well as verify each transaction, it relies on a network of computers to do arbitrary complicated math problems that run 24 hours a day. And so think of it like a giant server farm. And these computers are running all the time, constantly keeping tabs of and keeping the distributed network in line and also verifying each of the transactions. So in order to do that, that requires tremendous amounts of energy expelled to do. So that's where that comes from. Other currencies have moved away from proof of work to more greener versions called proof of stake. Or even Algorand in Boston does something like proof of stake. But there's much greener options that are popping up, but Bitcoin was the original one, and they are very energy usage required.
I might just add that I think it's the fact that they're positioning some of these operations in mines is really just coincidental. And I do think talking about mining Bitcoin in mines is confusing to people, understandably so. But I think that's where some of that confusion might come from.
It's a metaphoric term, Larry. You don't physically mine, you kind of make the computer do complex calculations, and that's what created Bitcoin.
Hey, Larry, if you're really interested in this, Gary Gensler, who's currently the chair at the SEC, taught, I think, two classes at MIT. Yuri, was it two classes? And I yes. think that some of his lectures are public on the internet, and he is an amazing teacher and really breaks it down pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yes, his classes you can access now. The Digital Currency Initiative also at MIT has a few other lectures with that, but they're phenomenal. He does a great job of breaking everything down. It's unfortunate that he doesn't teach that class because they stopped a couple of those classes now after he left.
Oh, by Yuri's book.
That too. It's an explainer, but Gary goes into a lot more detail in his classes over a much longer period of time.
Now, Robert has his hands up. Robert?
Yeah, I was just starting to think about this. If I'm an employee in pick a country that accepts it, if you will, or is not, doesn't stop me from using it. How do I pay for things? I posed this and some people mentioned some entities in the US, but if I'm, let's say I'm based in Saigon, I've got to pay rent, I've got to buy food, I've got to do various things. Yuri, if I'm getting paid in Bitcoin, then how do I pay for, how do I live? And how do I acquire the goods and services that I need in order to live? Because this isn't for investment and for fun. This is for me to get paid so that I can pay my rent and eat food and do all that other good stuff. So that was my question.
Yes, of course. And that is a phenomenal question, because the answer is it depends on where you're living, and it's not necessarily like a one-to-one ratio. So for example, here is a credit card I own that's it's based off of crypto.com, but it's a debit card. And so I can take Bitcoin going on their system and load it up in this card and use it like I would a normal debit card. And any store that accepts Visa doesn't know the difference, because crypto.com takes care of that for me. So that's one way to do it, is to use, there's multiple services that do that where you can just use it like a normal credit card. But to like pay rent and other things outside of this, you have to work with a company or a like your landlord to do that. Now you can do it through PayPal. You can do it through a few different services that allow you to send, and they will do the transactions for you. But that is still a complicated process, and it's still being sorted out right now.
And if I may, is it, we're all pretty US centric. What about, we're talking about paying people where the currency in their country is volatile. That was one mm-hmm. of the things that I, as a CEO, was pushing for. So is it as widely utilized there, or am I taking a flyer? As the CEO, I think that this is what people will be able to work with, and it'll be fine, and they'll be happy, and I'll have lots of employees, and I'll continue to be the top company. So can you comment on that globally?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, did Bob or did you want to? I can comment on that directly, but I don't know if other people wanted to say something too.
No, okay. Why don't you comment on Bob,
and then
Bob. Well, Bob will have a chance.
Sure. So it depends. The answer is it depends on the country. Like, for example, there is a startup organization I know called AirTM. They work in South America right now, particularly with countries where their current local currency is completely destabilized. And what they do is they match up individuals who want to transfer their local currency to brokers, basically. And you can exchange for Bitcoin or another currency, which allows you to have savings, which they've never had before because their currencies are so inflationary or deflationary, that they just, everything is so volatile, they can't do anything, or it will connect you to US dollars and allow you to do that. So it's an intermediary service that allows that to happen. And that's coming up, and it's becoming more popular in countries that need an alternative. We saw it in a few different countries in Africa where they would turn to talk time minutes instead of the local currency, because they needed something that wasn't so volatile that allowed them to buy goods. And so there's a whole other currency, actually it's in Zimbabwe, around talk time minutes.
So Bob, and Bob's going to be the last question.
Okay, it's a comment more than a question. In our group, Susan, I guess she's not here anymore, but Susan discussed that we had a kind of robust discussion. And one of the things, Robin, jump in if I'm not representing, but one of the things was readiness for a number of companies. Someone said then that there were companies already doing it, but when they named these companies, they were very, very sophisticated companies with great resources. We have millions and millions of businesses in the United States that employ a few people up to, you know, tens of thousands of people or more. And there's no real kind of utility yet for not only answering all of the legal and regulatory volatility questions, but there's not a utility as there is now for paying people, such as, I'm going to use ADP only as one example, for which a company pays a price that it then considers to be a fair value for not doing the payroll all by itself. And I think the conclusion in our group was that we needed to recognize that crypto was probably here. Someone used the expression, the genie out of the bottle. And the question, therefore, is in what degree and what levels of sophistication do different levels of companies at different stages need to be in order to then use crypto? And therefore, it's really not whether the CEO should be making this decision. Of course, we supported the CEO because it seems to be going in that direction. But what utilities will the CEO have to make this administratively friendly rather than a nightmare? Because we agreed that at the moment, it would probably be much more complicated than giving your payroll to ADP. That's my comment.
Thank you very much. I at this time, since we're approaching our stopping hour, I want to thank Yuri for an interesting case and an interesting discussion about a topic that I suspect we will be dealing with next year at this time. But for any of you that are kind of intrigued by this, I would urge you to take a look at Yuri's book, How to Discover Bitcoin and Cryptocurrency Before Your Grandmother Beats You to It. And we look forward to seeing you all at our next Seat at the Table program in a month. In the meantime, for those of you in the Boston area, stay dry in the coming snowstorm, and we look forward to seeing you next month. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Good night, everyone. Good discussion.
Great to meet everybody.
See you all.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.